Hey everybody, we're back for another episode of Slinging It with QB Velocity. Very happy to have episodes going back again. This is our second one in the past week, and today we are very happy to have on Coach Chris Merritt, head coach of Bryant University. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. And just a little background on Coach. So Coach has a lot of experience in football as a head coach and as a player. For the past three seasons, he's been the head coach at Bryant. And before that, he coached high school ball out in Florida. And before that as well, he was a head coach out in Germany for a few years, coached at a few other colleges. And he also played at Indiana University and also played in Europe. So Coach has a wide range of experience with a lot of championships, a lot of wins over the years. So definitely has that background and pedigree on him. So Coach, first question I have for you, I mean, very exciting news over at Bryant, you know, heading into the Big South Conference. So how do you guys feel about that?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, we're excited. Well, I really appreciate the relationships and the opportunity to compete in the NEC. You know, the NEC is a limited conference in FCS football in terms of scholarship numbers. And, you know, when we got the opportunity to join the Big South and kind of step up in profile a little bit, you know, we were excited to take the opportunity. You know, we're going to be playing against larger profile teams now, which means we've got to recruit differently. We've got to recruit a higher profile kid. And we're just excited for the stage that we're getting ready to play on. You know, our conference games will be taking every other game. We'll be taking a charter flight to them. So we're excited about that. It's a great opportunity for us to compete at a higher level and keep building on the momentum we've started here in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just mentioned a little bit, but what are some, maybe some other aspects we can kind of expect from Bryant going forward?
Mike, if you don't mind, I got to close my door here.
For, yeah, no problem. You guys are
editing, so I got coaches who don't have a volume control.
Go ahead.
All right, buddy. So go ahead and repeat that last question and get the thing started.
Yeah, so I know you just mentioned. Yeah, no problem. I know you just mentioned a little bit about, you know, some things we can expect from Bryant going forward, heading to a new conference. So what are some other aspects we can kind of expect from Bryant going forward?
Well, we are excited. We're, you know, part of the deal here in the transition. New stadium, you know, the current stadium we have has a excellent home side, brand new video scoreboard. Our weight room is state-of-the-art, first class, and it kind of gets a three-way box. We're building a new basketball arena conference. It's a big conference hall, and from the side of that arena will come down another set of stands on the other side that'll completely box in our stadium with a new press box and VIP boxes and club seating and all, you know, chair back seating on that side. So we're excited. It's going to be a great New England setting for a college. It's going to be a tight stadium in there, and we're excited for that advancement as well.
That's amazing. And what at Bryant makes the student experience special compared to other colleges?
Well, you know, there's a misnomer out there that Bryant's a difficult school. You know, our graduates are coveted in the business world. Our graduates will start off making almost $70,000 a year. You go to collegefactual.com, you can compare that. And you know, you look at that and you look at the nearest Ivy League school at Brown University, their graduates on average earn about $2,000 less per year than our graduates. So that speaks volumes of our faculty, of what they do to prepare our kids for life. And, you know, President Mankley and President Gattel, his replacement, follows along the same pathway. You know, President Mankley required all of our students to have a major and a minor, and that really set our graduates apart from the rest of the educational system. You know, our graduates go out there with a major and a minor, and And that just makes our graduates more attractive. And, you know, our school, it's got a great setting. We do not hurt for space. If you've ever been here on Bryant University, you know, we have 6 football fields. You know, we've got tons of space that we have out here. It's a beautiful campus. You know, there's no prettier place than New England in the fall time. You know that. I mean, you grew up here. I guess you need to spend some more time away from home to realize how good you had it growing up. But, you know, you look at the colors and the palettes and you know, we're right here on the ocean. You know, we're right here 30 minutes from some really nice beaches in Newport. And you know, Providence is not a really large town, but it's not a small town either. You know, it's a good mid-sized city that, you know, provides a lot of social activities, and there's a ton of colleges around here. You know, the question you asked about our student experience, you know, the social scene within Bryant is solid, but what makes this area pretty darn good is that there are 5 or 6 colleges all within, you know, 15, 30 minutes that our kids go down to Providence and they mingle in all the social spotlights. And it's just a great place to be a young person.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of shift gears a little to talk a little bit about yourself. So when was the moment, if you think back to it, where you realized that you wanted to do coaching as your profession?
Oh, man. Back in 1990-91, I was a defensive back at Indiana University. I was a walk-on. And at that time, I had this crazy idea that I wanted to be an agent. I knew I wanted to work in sports, but I thought it would be a business. I didn't think it would be as a coach. Excuse me. I have to edit this one. But I was a defensive back, and every guy that I backed up at Indiana made it to the NFL. You know, I was a 4-year letterman. I was a special teams captain, but I never got the chance to start. And I credit that to our coaches at Indiana at the time that recruited some really good football players. And, you know, every guy made it to the NFL. The only way that I could compete was to make sure that I knew everything about the position. And so I became a real student of the game. It got to the point where, you know, my teammates would come to me about coverage checks and formation checks and things like that. And you know, my nickname kind of became coach at the end because they would joke around. And then I realized how much fun it was. And so I have never worked in any other line of work. You know, as soon as I got done at Indiana, I went straight to, within a month of graduation, I was at Eastern Illinois University as an assistant coach. And I just fell in love with it. And really, to be honest with you, I don't look at it as work. I'm lucky. You know, I haven't been to a day of work in 35 years. You know, I get to coach football. I get to be around young people all the time. I get to play games. I get to get excited about where I'm at and the opportunities that where I'm at can provide a young man. And, you know, yard work is work to me. You know, football's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that. And you've had some pretty amazing experiences over there. Like you mentioned, Eastern Illinois, you were in Germany, head coach at a high school in Florida. So what have those different experiences taught you over the years?
Sure. Well, my first couple of years in college football before I went to Europe, that taught me time management, because as a player, you have no idea. You have no clue as a player the amount of time that coaches spend in their office. It makes what you think is a busy week look nothing. You know, the fact that these coaches will spend between 70 and 80 hours a week in the office during the season was my first wake-up call. Okay. And then my time in Europe. Well, what that taught me was I was in Sweden for 2 years and I was in Germany for almost 4. All right. So what that time taught me was how to communicate and teach, because my players were Swedish. My players were German. English was their second language, sometimes their third language. And so I had to really be good at communicating. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because that's what separated us from being well coached compared to some of the other teams that we competed against. So that period of my career taught me time management. Now the teaching side of things, or the communication side of things. I came back, was at a small college in Pennsylvania. That was rough. You know, we were at Teal College. You know, we had no facilities. Most of the kids that we signed, we were their second choice and they were our second choice. So that was a marriage made in hell. And, you know, what that taught me was, you know, be grateful for what you had as a coach. Because when you don't have it, you don't realize what you're going up against in the world of recruiting. And then as a high school coach, that really taught me the aspect of teaching. That really, you know, coaches are teachers. They're just that their classroom's green with white lines on it. That's the only difference. And by living in Miami where football was king, where football was important, I was at a great high school with a great tradition. And I really enjoyed that environment. And there I had several opportunities, put hundreds of kids into college. I still have four or five in the NFL right now. I'm going to have another one drafted here in a couple of weeks, Josh Job at Alabama. So just excited what that opportunity gave me. And to be honest with you, it gave me to not just the ability to communicate, but how to communicate with young people. And what I do is I take that experience and I use that in recruiting right now. I know what, you know, I worked with 16, 17 year olds for 18 years. I know how they think. And I think to be able to recruit today's kid, you have to understand today's kid and be able to communicate with today's kid, if that makes sense. Okay. And so, you know, I moved in on to Brandt and, yeah, with my first 3 years I've learned here is, well, all the other stuff's out the window. You know, your first thing you need is to under prompt and over deliver. Second thing is that the pile of work on your desk will never get smaller. So don't try to eliminate it. It will always be there. So my whole coaching journey for the last, since 1993, has been, it's been a learning experience. It's constantly changing, as the world of football constantly changes. But the one thing that always stays the same is the what I call the sacred time. And that's the time in between the white lines out there on the field with a practice plan in one hand, a watch in the other, and a whistle around your neck. And that's to me is what I live for.
Yeah, 100%. That's great. And I know this is a little bit of a tough question, but is there a particular player over the years that has really kind of stood out to you and maybe not your favorite, you know, I don't want to say a favorite player that you've ever coached, but someone who's really stood out, not necessarily for what he did on the field, but maybe what he did off the field, how he was as a teammate, as a leader, like stuff like that.
Sure. You know, it's tough. That is a tough question because 30 years of coaching and, you know, you run into literally, you know, a large number of talented human beings, really good people. And, you know, I can go through the guys that were in the NFL. You know, I can go through CJ Henderson, first round draft pick, Josh Uche with the Patriots, second round draft pick. Josh Job was going to be a draft pick coming up. You know, every kid's a little bit different. You know, I would say the two kids that probably pop off at me, number one, would be a young man by the name of Eric Laura. Eric Laura was a Cuban kid that was just a gritty player for us. That Cuban kid that just did everything for us, was the right leader on the team. Socially was a great kid. People call him an overachiever. I don't see that. I think the kid got everything he deserved to get. You know, he did a great job for us at Columbus High School and turned right around, went to Eastern Illinois University where they recruited a quarterback by the name of Jimmy Garoppolo that came in with him. And Jimmy And Eric had a great relationship, and that led to Eric breaking all of the FCS records for receiving in two consecutive years. He got a cup of coffee in the NFL, but just a great kid that's always kept up with me, who I always communicate with. And then ironically, his brother-in-law is a sophomore on our team now, who ironically also played for me at Columbus. But just comes from a great family and just a great kid. And probably the second one is a young man who's going to have a great opportunity here shortly, and that's Josh Jobe. You know, Josh had a rough go of it. You know, came from some tough situations, but you put a shirt and tie on him. This is a young man who came in with a reading level as an eighth grader, probably about that as a fifth grader, and. Everybody worked really hard with this kid. Just to show you the type of kid that he is, his middle school teachers passed a hat around to collect money to pay for his registration fee to go to Columbus High School. And that, to me, screams the type of kid that he is. Mm. You know, he battled, got himself eligible, and then the state of Florida changed the rules on his eligibility. They said that he was ineligible to play football his senior year at Columbus. So I shipped him off up here to Cheshire Academy, where he was able to get that final year in, and he accepted a full scholarship at Alabama, where they took great care of him there. And all I cared about was that he graduated, and he did in December. You know, he graduated with a national championship, you know, ring on one finger and a diploma on the other hand. And very proud of him. Now he's going to get the opportunity to get drafted here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, when you look at where he started and how far he's come, and that's been to his credit and obviously the people that have helped him get there. But those are just a couple of the remarkable kids that I had the opportunity to get with and be a part of over the last 30 years.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. Two amazing examples, great stories right there for sure. So, coach, what advice would you have for a young coach, you know, looking to kind of make it in the profession and just improve on what they're doing?
Well, you know, first, you know, you have to see where you fit in, and then you've got to attack the path. You know, it all depends what type of coach you want to be. Listen, if you want to be a high school coach, I think that's awesome. Get your education degree. Get a job teaching and start off by coaching in high school. If you want to be a collegiate coach, there's a pathway for you as well. But in most cases, that's going to start off as a not. And you know, kids today just don't like to hear it. But that word called volunteer, you know, that means no money. But that's the pathway that's in our business nowadays. You know, entry level positions are very hard to come by. You want to prove to a college staff, or you want to prove to a college coach that you want the opportunity. You know, you go, you volunteer. It might be a whole year. You might have to, you know, deliver DoorDash or Uber Eats or something. You got to find a way to put money in the pocket. I get it, but you know, you have to be willing to put in the work and the grind and the hours to get the opportunity, just to get a GA position or just to get a part-time coaching position, and be willing. You know, the key is be successful where you're at. Don't always be looking where you're going. Opportunities will happen to those who are successful where they're at. Those guys who are always coaching with one foot at the door, always looking for the next opportunity, that's tough. You know, that'll turn off a head coach that you're currently working for, because it's obvious. You know, it's getting into the business with our sport, high school guy who became a Division I head coach, but it's a caste system. You know, usually if you start off in Division III, it's difficult to get out of Division III. If you start off in Division II, it's the same thing. As you know, every level is kind of a caste system. And I'm not to say that there's not vertical movement within the levels, but the opportunities are limited, and you need to enter at the level that you wish to pursue. The higher the level, the higher the risk. I mean, the higher the financial gain, yes. Maybe the higher prestige, yes. But you don't do your job, you're out of one. And that's just look at where you want to insert yourself in the college football world or the coaching world, and then take the best path to get there.
Yeah, no doubt. And now shifting gears to kind of the recruiting world. So what are some things that you as a coach, when you're recruiting an athlete, that you're looking for in them?
Sure. Well, first, he's got to fit our box. You know, even as a high school coach, I was naive. I kept thinking that, my specific kids were, college coaches were crazy because my kid wasn't taken. You know, and the reality is this, is that we have to get we have a physical box here. So depending on the position that he plays, you know, we're looking for guys that are specific height, weight, measurables with speed. And the reason why is the competition we play against has those. I'll use offensive line as an example. If a kid is, if the D line that we're playing against on every Saturday basis, 6'4", 6'5", kids, it's difficult for a 6'1 offensive lineman to physically get done what we're asking them to do. So we're going to have our offensive lineman fit a specific size box, okay? If he does not fit in the box, he has to have something special or freaky that pulls him back into the box. Like, for example, if we say that our interior linemen have to be 6'3", 280 and above, and that's where we start looking. But we found a kid that's 6 foot and he's 300 pounds, but he's a heavyweight state championship wrestler that's got long arms, that's got great power. We'll look at, you just can't dominate your roster like that. We can't take those. We can't fill our rooms with exceptions. Everybody's always going to be out there, and they're always going to point out exceptions. You know, Zach Taylor, he was 5'9" as an NFL linebacker. Well, he is an exception. All right. The average size of a linebacker in the NFL was much different. You know, you're always going to find the exceptions, and they're out there. I'm not here to say they're not, but you can't dominate your room with exceptions. Okay. You can always have one, maybe two for that. So we start with the box physically, and then we look at the film. And, you know, the film, he can either play or he can't play. And we've got specific characteristics we look at for each position. And then we go to the academic piece. Of all the kids that we look at, we pull out the ones that fit our box. Of all the kids that fit our box, we watch their film. If we feel he can play at our level, then we look at the ones who can academically handle Bryant academics. If they can handle the Bryant academics, we then now go through our recruiting process with them, and then we'll rank them and then offer them according to their rank, if that makes sense. And that's at every position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know when you mentioned the offensive lineman exception, I thought it was interesting how you mentioned maybe a state championship, state champion wrestler or something. You know, good to see an offensive lineman. So, you know, how important is that for high school athletes to have other things that they're involved in that could make them an exception or help put them over the top as a recruit?
Sure. I mean, obviously the more sports you play, I think the better athlete you become. I think that's important for high school kids to not just play one sport. I think I think a kid that only played 4 years of high school football, those kids are at risk of burning out after 8 years of it straight. You have to find other ways to do things. But listen, if football is football, your deal, and that's what you do, then that's good too, you know. But I can just tell you that, you know, especially when it comes to our skill position, we have to get verified speeds. You know, somebody who looks really fast on film might be fast in comparison to the competition they're playing to. But, you know, if a kid who runs a 12 flat and 100 meter dash looks fast on film, at the end of the day, he's still going to be 12 flat. So You know, we need verified track times. We look for verified combine times, camp times. You know, we're going to go out there and make sure that we get stuff verified as best as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked a little bit off air about the transfer portal and just how the recruiting process is changing a little bit, especially with COVID, giving the athletes the extra year of eligibility. So what would you say, what would your kind of piece of advice be to high school athletes right now who maybe, you know, have gone a little impatient with the recruiting process just because the way it's changing?
Well, my heart goes out at being a high school coach for as many years as I was. My high school coach coaching days, you know, I have sent, like I said, hundreds of kids into college. I would not want to be a high school coach at this time point right now. That is a very tough task because only 25%, probably 25, maybe to 30% of the high school kids that would normally go get those seats are able to do it now. And it's tough. You know, especially this class and the previous class, because at least there's an avenue for the next two classes through the use of prep schools, through the use of maybe a two-year program someplace that gives them the ability to kind of lengthen that out. So when they do fall in, they could fall in line with the transition of the incoming classes and the outgoing classes. You know, it's not just the transfer portal. Okay, that's the one problem. The other problem is the extra year of eligibility that every player that was in college at the time received. And then you've got the transfer exemption, which means you don't have to sit out a year.
Right.
Okay. So what that, those three things have created is just an environment. It's free agency. Yeah. It's free agency. I'm concerned at my level, because I think any of our players that we develop and we invest our time in that become all conference, the bigger schools and the bigger FBS programs will poach as they get to their senior year. Because what will happen is that they want the old, you know, the FBS programs want their rosters to be as old as possible. So they've got two seniors that are playing the same position, or, you know, one that they've recruited and developed and one they just brought in from another program, and they battle it out. And guess what? The backup's pretty good.
Right.
And they're doing that at all positions across the board. That means that there's no entry level for these freshmen to come in. So, you know, for me, the biggest piece of advice I've given every young man, go where you're wanted. It's not always where you want to go. Okay. Go where you're wanted, because they're going to treat you the best. You know, no matter the situation, you're leasing college football for the next 4 years, you're renting it, you have to give it back. It's like a car that you lease, right? You know, you can either pay it for that car and drive it, or you can pay for it and park it in the driveway. Guess what? It still comes out of your, the price doesn't change, and you have to give it back in 4 years anyway. So go where you're wanted, because you're going to be given the chance to drive that car. You're going to get the chance, first chance to play. They're going to treat you better, okay? I'm not saying don't be a walk-on. I'm saying that, you know, think about it, go where you're wanted. Walk-on situations are tough right now. Just because the numbers of kids that are out there, the NIL has provided a whole nother world of mess. Mm-hmm. It hasn't reached our level. I don't know when it will, but, it hasn't yet, but it will eventually, I'm sure. And, you know, I would tell them to go out there and market yourself, go to camps, be seen, compete. That's the best advice I can give them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, Coach, that was pretty much everything I had. That was a great